same scientific research and discovery in respect as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And welcome to Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief, and we've got another great week of stories on technocracy to discuss today. First off, kind of on a light side, but not really, is the fact that Starbucks, your favorite coffee place, has decided to dairy shame customers in order to get them to skip so-called environmentally unfriendly whipped cream. Now, whipped cream comes from cows. Cows are evil because they emit methane gas. And so those evil dairy cows must be whipped into shape by reducing the amount of cream that's used in your favorite coffee drink at Starbucks. Well, of course, Starbucks has long been on the forefront of all things progressive. And now it has completely succumbed to sustainable development, aka technocracy, and will use social engineering techniques to force you to change your behavior. But they will not change their behavior, only you. The next story has to do with Parag Khanna. He's one of our favorite global technocrats, a darling boy of the global elite, a scholar, PhD, in high demand all around the world as a speaker. He's written multiple books on technocracy, including Technocracy in America, which he calls for a direct technocracy here. But Parag Khanna has recently released a book that declares that the 21st century belongs to Asia. And he claims that the 21st century indeed belongs to Asia, not to the United States or to the West in general. China, Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, and India are already well on their way to embracing technocracy. China, in particular, is exporting its new ideology to the rest of the world and especially to Asia. So this article comes as no surprise. And well, as a matter of fact, he might be right because, of course, China is not about to give up its technocratic leadership and its technocratic position in the world. It's already infiltrated every continent on Earth to export its technocracy. It's not going to walk away from that. So indeed, scientific dictatorship is running rampant throughout the world. Parag Khanna sees no particular problem with this and believes that it can lead to a better living condition in the world. So this is an article you might want to check out. Parag Khanna, the 21st century, belongs to Asia. Next up is the World Economic Forum, which debuts a new framework for central bank digital currency. I have warned for a long time that this is coming. In fact, I dedicated a chapter in my last book, Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, on fintech, that is financial technology, including blockchain. And cryptocurrencies, of course, have captured the mind of the world, especially those who are more given to anarchy, because this represents a currency that's outside of the banking system and generally an anarchy type of a currency, actually. But I've predicted for years now that the central banking system and the central banks would take over the entire space, claim it for themselves, and push everybody else into oblivion. Well, the oblivion part hasn't happened yet. But let me tell you, the World Economic Forum has said outright now that they have a policy framework set up for central bank digital currency that will be adopted throughout the world. It can't get any more plain than this. This article states, the WEF, together with some of the world's major central banks, has created a central bank digital currency policymaker toolkit. According to an announcement on January 22nd, the toolkit is the WEF's attempt to help policymakers understand whether deploying a CBDC would be advantageous and guide them through its design. The WEF collaborated with regulators, central bank researchers, international organizations, and experts from over 40 institutions to develop the framework. The head of blockchain and distributed ledger technology at the World Economic Forum, Sheila Warren, explained, quote, "Given the critical roles central banks play in the global economy, any central bank digital currency implementation, including potentially with blockchain technology, will have a profound impact domestically and internationally. It is imperative that central banks proceed cautiously with a rigorous analysis of the opportunities and challenges posed." Well, indeed, we've also written recently that the Bank for International Settlements has their own financial SWAT team working on digital currency implementation. So does the Bank of England. So does the Federal Reserve of the United States and other central banks around the world. So this is not something that they just thought up last week. This has been going on for some time. But the fact that the World Economic Forum now is involved in it indicates that everybody at the top of the global elite are completely bought into this idea of technocracy, scientific dictatorship, controlling the world, no person left behind, etc. We said this from the get-go because we knew that the source of all this from day one was the Trilateral Commission and members thereof. There were a few other organizations perhaps involved as well, but the Trilateral Commission was the major architect of the new international economic order. And here we have now the new international economic order. It's going to have a digital blockchain-oriented type of a currency that will force all cash out of existence. And if it wasn't enough, by the way, that the WEF and the central banks are all involved in a scheme to flip the world into sustainable development, which is technocracy, now Pope Francis, again, is in the news as having called for a new economy. Well, this Pope is a Marxist, as we know, but he also is anti-capitalist, and he is pro-United Nations. He's pro-sustainable development. And some Catholics consider Pope Francis to be a Marxist as well, but he's using his position and organization to orchestrate the entire planet into full-blown sustainable development, a.k.a. technocracy. In his sponsorship of a March 2020 economic summit, that's just another month away, called the Economy of Francisco, Francis calls for a different kind of economy, a new economy, and sustainable development. In Laudato Si, a cyclical that was written by the Pope a few years ago, the word sustainable was used 21 times to convince readers that UN-style sustainable development, a.k.a. technocracy, holds the future of the world. However, in a true application of the Hegelian dialectic, Francis attacks the so-called technocratic paradigm by stating, quote, "The technocratic paradigm also tends to dominate economic and political life." Well, indeed it does. The author of the following article only sees Marxism, but readers of Technocracy News and Trends understand that Marxism is only the necessary stepping stone to technocracy and not the end in itself. This was not my idea originally, by the way. This idea was originally postulated by Zbigniew Brzezinski in his 1970 book, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. And this is exactly what he said. I simply repeated it, perhaps embellished a little bit, but the idea is clear. Marxism is a great destroyer. It's able to tear down the world economic system so that technocracy can walk in and provide the miraculous solution, according to science. We'll control everything by algorithm. So this is an article that indeed you should read, especially if you are Catholic. Pope Francis calls for a new economy. What is he thinking? Well, he's thinking that the world needs a new economy. We know that that's technocracy. Well, here's another global elite twist on technocracy, this time from the Bank for International Settlements. It warns of a green swan climate event coming up straight ahead, they say, and they say it could trigger a financial crisis. Well, we have other things right now that could trigger a financial crisis for sure, but I wrote this article because I have a special fondness for the book called The Black Swan that was written several years ago, actually in 2007. It was called The Impact of the Highly Improbable. And the author, Nassim Nicholas Taleb, he popularized this concept. He laid out three requirements for a black swan event. Number one, the event must be unknown and unpredictable. Number two, it must cause a massive impact. And number three, people then will try to rationalize that it was really predictable in the first place after all. And now that the Bank for International Settlements has guzzled the green global warming Kool-Aid, it now suggests that a green swan event is predictable as to when it will occur, but it is absolutely certain that it will occur, they say. Of course, this concept of green swan is not really in parallel with the concept of a black swan, because a black swan, by definition, is absolutely unpredictable from the get-go. You don't know how, when, what, where, or anything else. It just happens out of the blue, but it has a major impact. So they're saying in this case, well, there's going to be a major impact, all right. We just don't know when, but we do know it's going to occur in the future. That's like saying that we know that an asteroid is going to hit planet Earth someday. It's an absolute certainty it will, but it could be any time between now and 850 million years from now. Well, one's going to hit us someday. The Bloomberg report states on this, many central banks already contribute to the effort by monitoring climate-related risks through stress tests, incorporating environmental, social, and governance criteria in pension funds, or working with banks on disclosing carbon-intensive exposure to assess potential financial stability risks. This was stated by the Bank of France governor, by the way. He continued, he said, the stark reality is that we are all losing the fight against climate change. He advocates two solutions the European Central Bank would discuss in its upcoming strategy review called Integrating Climate Change in All Economic and Forecasting Models and Overhauling the Collateral Framework to Reflect Climate-Related Risks. He continues, quote, if central banks are to preserve financial and price stability in the age of climate change, it is in their interest to help mobilize all the forces needed to win the battle. Well, Governor Villeroy apparently reflects consensus among central bankers. We are already losing the battle against climate change, so we'd better double down or maybe triple down our efforts to assure victory. However, if there is a battle, it exists only in his own fantastical mind. That goes for the rest of the BIS elite and all the other central bankers as well. In the real world, there is no real battle because there is no real enemy. Conceptions of climate change originated from mostly faulty computer models, and none of their predictions have actually materialized, not one. If people like Villeroy were not in charge of the world's entire financial structure and system, nobody would care what they think, but they are in charge. And thanks to their own private delusions, they intend to completely flip the global financial system upside down. Of course, the green agenda is all about sustainable development, aka technocracy. The United Nations has convinced world political leaders that their nations will perish unless they go along with it. The global elitists behind the United Nations, for instance, the members of the Trilateral Commission, have convinced the entire global banking community to go along as well. So the delusion marches on, unimpeded, unobstructed. And it's interesting that real people on the ground out here in America and around the world and Europe understand that global warming, by and large, is a scam. It's a disingenuous political ploy to twist the assets and resources of the world out of the hands of citizens and even nations and into the hands of the global elite. Well, they're well on their way to doing this. Here's a good news story. New Jersey, a vaccine bill there that was expected to pass, ended in utter disaster. The title of the story is Collapsed. New Jersey vaccine bill to end religious exemptions rejected. This is very, very good news for citizens who value health freedom, and it's not good news for the technocrats that tried to shove it down their throat in the first place. But angry parents turned the tide on this mandated vaccine business in New Jersey. by forcing the state Senate to leave religious exemptions in place. This is a major victory over technocrats who claim that the science on vaccine is settled. Have you ever heard that before? The science is settled. This is nonsense. Citizens recognize it as being nonsense, and they're pushing back. All you need to do is get a few angry moms going in a given area. It's something that goes viral very quickly because all moms are protective of their own children, and they want the right to be able to say when their children will be vaccinated or not. So this article states the battleground is now set. On one side are those who continue to claim the science is settled on the vaccine safety issue and want to eliminate all vaccine exemptions, essentially forcing all children to get vaccines, whether their parents agree or not. On the other side are those who believe that the science is far from settled and believe that parents should have the right to choose what gets injected into their children's bodies without fear of punishment. The latest skirmish of this battle was on Monday in Trenton, New Jersey, where a bill proposing one of the nation's broadest bans on religious exemptions to childhood vaccines did not have enough support in the Democrat-controlled state Senate to be put up for a vote. The bill would have ended a policy that allows parents in New Jersey to cite religious beliefs as the reason their children have not been immunized without affecting the child's ability to be enrolled in school. And of course, the setup for this was, if little Johnny isn't vaccinated, don't bother bringing him to school because we're not letting him in. And so they were requiring all children to be vaccinated, whether they wanted it or not. Now, the fact that they did this, by the way, on a religious exemption is one thing. This should not be the issue that it's a religious exemption or whatever. It should be a civil right all the way across society that nobody has the right to demand that you receive any type of health treatment. It's your choice. You are the one responsible for your own health, not the government. And if the government ever gets complete authority to determine what goes into your body, even if it's just a little needle prick at first, society is in deep, deep water, because where will it stop? This is a slippery slope. Vaccines might be the issue today, but what other type of issues will come up later? Up to and including even euthanasia for old people. Hey, when you've outlived your usefulness to society and you're consuming more than you're contributing, you're not worth anything to us anymore. So it's time for you to check out. Oh, gee, I remember they tried that already in the movie Soylent Green. You may remember that movie. Euthanasia centers where, when you know it's your time, this is where you go to check out. We'll help you along the process and we'll take care of you all the way until your last breath. No, this vaccine thing is as evil as the day is long. And I'm happy to say that the people who are fighting the vaccine movement in America are some of the most brave people in the world, as far as I'm concerned. People like Del Bigtree, who has risked everything in his career to make a statement on vaccines. People like Robert Kennedy Jr., who also has been censored by almost every social media platform in the country, actually in the world now, for his outspoken views on vaccine safety and on whether or not government-mandated vaccines should be permitted. These people are a tremendous resource to the movement, and even if you don't agree with them on everything and on everything else they might believe, you certainly can give them a tip of the hat for standing up for the Bill of Rights in America. The last story, again, is going to bring up Google. I suppose that Google is at risk of becoming a swear word or a curse word at some point in time because they keep pushing the envelope further and further to dictate to society what society will become. The title of this article is Google, a New Breed of Dictator Never Before Seen in History. This article, by the way, was written by Dr. Joseph Mercola, and many of you will recognize Dr. Mercola's name. He's one of the leading alternative health experts in America, and he's been an advisor via the internet to millions and millions of people around the world on how to take care of yourself without necessarily taking everything that the drug industry wants to give to you or shove down your throat. Well, I wrote at the top of this, Google is an existential technocrat threat to all other forms of government and governance. That includes our republic It includes democratically run countries as well. Run by unelected and unaccountable technocrats, Google pushes toward technocracy or scientific dictatorship. And ironically, the people who are the subjects of this dictatorship have voluntarily signed up for it. They really don't know that they did, but that's the result. This article by Dr. Mercola states, Robert Epstein, who received his PhD in psychology from Harvard in 1981 and served as the former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today, is now a senior research psychologist for the American Institute of Behavioral Research and Technology, where for the last decade, he has helped expose Google's manipulative and deceptive practices. He explains what got him interested in investigating the internet search monopoly in the first place. Dr. Epstein states, quote, in 2012, January 1st, I received some emails from Google saying my website contained malware and that they were somehow blocking access. This means I had gotten onto one of Google's blacklists. My website did contain some malware. It was pretty easy to get rid of. But it turns out it's hard to get off of a Google blacklist. That's the problem. I started looking at Google just a little bit differently. I wondered, first of all, why were they notifying me about this rather than some government agency or some nonprofit organization? Why was a private company notifying me? In other words, who made Google sheriff of the internet? Second, I learned they had no customer service department, which seemed very strange. So if you have a problem with Google, then you have a problem because they don't help you solve the problem. I learned also that although you can get onto a blacklist in a split second, it could take weeks to get off of a blacklist. There have been businesses that have gotten onto their blacklist and have gone out of business while trying to straighten out the problem. The thing that really caught my eye, because I've been a programmer my whole life, was I couldn't figure out how they were blocking access to my website, not just through their own products, Google.com, the search engine, or through Chrome, which is their browser, but through Safari, which is an Apple product, through Firefox, which is a browser run by Mozilla, a nonprofit organization. How was Google blocking access through so many different means? The point is, I just started to get more curious about the company, and later in 2012, I happened to be looking at a growing literature which was about the power of search rankings to impact sales. This was in the marketing field, and it was just astonishing. In other words, if you could push yourself up one more notch in the search results, that could make a difference between success or failure for your company. It could mean a lot more income. It turns out that this initial research was saying that people really trust those higher-ranked search results. I simply ask a question. I wondered whether, if people trust those higher-ranked search results, I could use the search results to influence people's opinions, maybe even their votes. Close quote. Dr. Mercola continues here now. What Epstein discovered through his subsequent research, which began in 2013, is that, yes, biased search results can indeed be used to influence public opinion and sway undecided voters. What's more, the strength of that influence was shocking. He also eventually discovered how Google is able to block website access on browsers other than their own. His findings were published in 2016 in U.S. News and World Report. Google's powers pose three specific threats to society. Number one, they're a surveillance agency with significant yet hidden surveillance powers. As noted by Epstein, quote, the search engine, Google Wallet, Google Docs, Google Drive, YouTube, these are surveillance platforms. In other words, from their perspective, the value these tools have is they give more information about you. Surveillance is what they do. Point number two, they're a censoring agency with the ability to restrict or block access to websites across the internet, thus deciding what people can and cannot see. They even have the ability to block access to entire countries and the internet as a whole. the most crushing problem with this kind of internet censorship is that you don't know what you don't know. If a certain type of information is removed from search and you don't know it should exist somewhere, you'll never go looking for it. And when searching for information online, how would you know that certain websites or pages have been removed from the search results in the first place? The answer is you don't. For example, Google has been investing in DNA repositories for quite a long time and are adding DNA information to our profiles. According to Epstein, Google has taken over the National DNA Repository, but articles about that, which he has cited in his own writings, have all vanished. Number three, they have the power to manipulate public opinion through search rankings and other means. Epstein says, "To me, that's the scariest area, because Google is shaping the opinions, thinking, beliefs, attitudes, purchases, and votes of billions of people around the world without anyone knowing that they're doing so. And perhaps even more shocking, without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace. They're using new techniques of manipulation that have never existed before in human history. And they are, for the most part, subliminal. But they don't produce tiny shifts. They produce enormous shifts in people's thinking very rapidly. Some of these techniques I've discovered are among the largest behavioral effects ever discovered in the behavioral sciences," close quote. And I remind you that this is Dr. Epstein's specialty, behavioral sciences. He's speaking out of his own discipline and experience. And when he says that this is among the largest behavioral effects ever discovered, I expect he knows what he's talking about. Dr. Mercola continues, "While surveillance is Google's primary business, their revenue, which exceeds $130 billion a year, comes almost exclusively from advertising. All that personal information you provided them through the various products is sold to advertisers looking for a specific target audience. And yes, it does boil down on one hand, it's all about money, but money is the only thing that enables these technocrats to their social engineering experiment." I'll skip down in the article now where it says, the subtitle, "A Dictator Unlike Anything the World Has Ever Seen." Dr. Mercola writes, "Another, an even more frightening possibility is that Google could allow its biased algorithm to favor one candidate over another without caring about which candidate is favored. That is the scariest possibility," Epstein says, "because now you've got an algorithm, a computer program, which is an idiot, deciding who rules us. It's crazy." Mercola continues, "Well, this sounds like it should be illegal. It's not, because there are no laws or regulations that restrict or dictate how Google must rank its search results. Courts have actually concluded that Google is simply exercising its right to free speech, even if that means destroying the businesses they demote in their search listings or blacklistings. The only way to protect ourselves from this kind of hidden influence is by setting up monitoring programs such as Epstein's all over the world. As a species, it's the only way we can protect ourselves from new types of online technologies that can be used to influence us," he says. "No dictator anywhere has ever had even a tiny fraction of the power that this company has." Epstein is also pushing for government to make the Google Search Index a public commons, which would allow other companies to create competing search platforms using Google's database. While Google's search engine cannot be broken up, its monopoly would be thwarted by forcing it to hand over its index to other search platform developers. And that could go a long ways, actually. But Google has absolutely no reason to give up any kind of access to anything that it owns, and you can bet that it will fight tooth and nail to the death to prevent other people from encroaching on its exclusive monopoly. I include a video, by the way, in this article called "The Creepy Line." This is a movie that you can get in several places on the internet. You can listen to the trailer and you can listen to some of the documentary in this video that I posted. I suggest really you take an hour or two and really get your head wrapped around on what Google's up to. This will have a major impact, by the way, on the 2020 election in our country. While everybody is fighting and squabbling in Washington, D.C. over impeachment and over which Democrat candidate is going to be ultimately going up against Donald Trump, nobody but nobody is paying attention to Google, which has the unilateral power to throw the election in any direction it chooses to. I can tell you right now, they're not too happy with President Trump. But it likely is going to turn out that the biggest influencer in our own 2020 election this year will be Google. Other countries are similarly concerned, by the way, but since we live in America, we'll just keep our comments to America. I don't think anybody in America, and I don't care who they are, Democrat, Republican, Green, Communist, Socialist, I don't think anybody wants a company like Google determining that their vote is useless and that Google will persuade people to vote the way it wants them to vote. I don't think anybody likes to be manipulated. I don't care who they are. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next week.